Do you have non-stop mind chatter, but don't know how to make it shut up already? In this episode, I will share how I became a spiritual teacher on quieting the mind. From Maui, Hawaii, I'm Lucky, and this is Quiet Your Mind Chatter. Aloha and welcome to Quiet Your Mind Chatter. I am your host, Lucky, sending you light and love from the island of Maui, here in the heart of Hawaii. If you are ready to hush those nonstop voices inside your head that have been bossing you around, then join me here on my lanai overlooking the ocean. The sun is shining, the ocean breeze is gently clearing away everything that no longer serves us. I am an author and personal coach with a lifetime of experiences that have led me here where I am offering support for your journey ahead. In every episode of this podcast, you will receive wellness tools to help you quiet your mind and enjoy the moment. Together, you and I will team up with others on our spiritual path to set miracles in motion and then dance with delight as we watch them unfold, sharing our stories. Woohoo! Today, I am going to share my story, and then I want to hear from you as we move from the isolated world inside our own heads into a supportive community. We help ourselves and each other. Moving forward one baby step at a time, we are heartened by our shared humility. Though our progress may seem slow, we will blink and find ourselves standing firmly on the once distant shore. Problems which had appeared shameful and insurmountable washed away in the tide of honesty. In sharing our struggles and our victories, we come to know that we are loved. And hallelujah for that, right? Whether you hear this live or 5 years down the road, I want to know who you are now, who you're becoming, where you live, how young at heart you are. Connect with me through wellnesswithlucky.com, on YouTube and Facebook at wellnesswithlucky, or on Instagram at wellnesslucky. Receiving my calling. The night I was called to be a channel of healing was an evening like any other. I was driving home after working at a regular job on a regular day, thinking regular thoughts. But when I turned onto my street, I received a message from a spiritual power telling me to become a life coach. Now, mind you, at that point, I was not a hugely spiritual person. Hearing the voice of God giving me specific directions was not commonplace for me. But in that moment, every fiber in my being clearly received the message. What happened next, you asked? I did what any strong, self-sufficient woman would do. I ignored the message. I tried to write it off as some cuckoo anomaly. In the following days, I moved along the path I thought was best, or at least most logical. I continued in my role as a high school English teacher on the North Shore of Maui. But soon my insides grew into a chaotic tangle of thorns. It wasn't until weeks later, when I took a tentative step toward my calling, that I was rewarded with a flicker of peace. In the world's teeniest, tiniest baby step toward divine surrender, I Googled life coach training. It was not an all-in leap of faith, but it was enough to gain confirmation that I was on the right path. During my brief internet search, my stubbornness fell away and I aligned with my higher self and everything felt right. But then I reverted to my thinking self and engaged once again in an internal tug of war. My road to becoming a personal coach happened in the only way it was ever going to happen. It unfolded over time. I had spent every waking moment up to that point scrapping for independence. I wasn't about to hand over the reins of my psyche to some feeling slash voice that appeared on some random Tuesday evening. But over time, I have improved at listening to my inner guidance, which I also refer to as divine intuition, God, my spirit guides, and my higher power, or HP for short. It wasn't blind faith that convinced me to trust this inner voice, but evidence. Over and over again, in big and small ways, when I trusted the nudges from my higher self, I was blessed with unearned and unexpected success. Eventually, each baby step surrender led to total surrender, which has thankfully emerged not as defeat and loss of self as I had originally suspected it would, but as peace that fills my entire being. Instead of some of my parts vying for dominance over other parts, I now stand before you as a whole woman, excited to share with you the wellness tools that led to my victory. Victory, woot woot. It's one of my favorite words. But if you are looking for some perfect guru who always gets it right, then you need to keep on looking. I am a regular woman who gets off track every day. What I hope to model for you is self-forgiveness. Choosing gentleness. Since childhood, I have been determined to create an exceptional life. Initially, I thought this meant decorating my walls with hard-won achievements, but now I see that while accomplishments can be fun and enriching, our path to peace is not through earning worthiness, but through being gentle with ourselves. As a young girl, before developing a mental framework to understand and express my beliefs, I knew in my bones that I deserved to be happy. While my ambitious work ethic displayed a refusal to settle for a mediocre life, my words told a different story. If you had questioned my younger self about my worthiness, I would have replied in my timid manner that other than getting good grades, there was nothing special about me. Based on the evidence that I had kept trying and failing to be happy, I had already decided that I was a failure. At the time, I didn't realize that I was growing up in an environment which made well-being impossible. Living with my parents and my older brother and sister in the suburbs of Cincinnati, Ohio, I learned only survival skills. Tools for thriving were simply unavailable. But there was one exception that always lifted me to a higher plane. On the day of my birth, the stars aligned to bless me with a starter's kit of writing talent. It was the one thing I didn't have to try hard at. I remember as a third grader pondering punctuation. With my yellow pencil poised over my lined paper, I struggled to decide how to end a sentence with Washington, D.C. Sentences ended with periods, I knew that. But with Washington, D.C., there was a period after the C. So did I need two periods? Afraid to ask, I made my best guess and concluded the sentence with two periods. When my teacher, bless her heart, took the time to correct my paper, she circled the second period in red ink. I was relieved to learn the rule. Since that morning at J.F. Burns Elementary, I've joyfully ended my sentences with a solitary punctuation mark. History, science, math, even reading, I strained to get it right, but writing always flowed naturally. Finding my voice. In my family of origin, with a rageaholic father, being quiet kept me safe. And because I've always taken everything to the extreme, I became invisible. At the end of each school year, in the pages of my yearbook, my classmates wrote, "You are so quiet," and "You never talk." In the printed word, however, I found my voice. Trained by my disapproving parents to be a people pleaser, my yearning for praise coalesced with my innate talent with the English language, resulting in exceptional writing skills. As I consistently received praise for my school papers, I developed an identity as a writer. After college, I dug in, committing myself to developing a career as a novelist. For many years, writing fiction was a cathartic harbor. I gave voice to my wounds and reached out for healing under the veil of make-believe. Shy and bumbling, but hungry for guidance, I began attending writers' conferences. In my terrified yet determined manner, I forced myself to approach authors at the conclusion of their presentations. As I awaited my turn, I appeared polite, but silently blasphemed the clueless amateurs in line ahead of me, rambling about their own work when anyone with half a brain knew that we were there not to blather, but to learn. When my turn arrived, I did my best to make my scripted questions sound natural in the ears of the author. After posing what I had hoped was an intelligible question, I attempted to look normal while gleaning as much wisdom as possible before it was the next wannabe's turn. I then rushed back to my hotel room where, before allowing myself the luxury of a hot shower to cleanse my smelly, sweaty armpits, I scribbled notes with great detail and even greater anxiety, fearful of forgetting key elements. Back at my desk Monday morning, I dismantled my notes into an organized framework. Then, in the following weeks, with serious discipline, I began systematically implementing the author's suggestions into my writing life, accepting ego-deflating aid. To sustain me in the wintry span between writers' conferences, I joined a variety of writing groups in my area. It was in the modest living rooms of my odd and earnest fellow writers that I learned to give and receive feedback with equal measures of bravery and tact. When I outgrew my local writing groups, I became a founding member of Hollywood Inc., a talented band of Oregonians named after the Portland neighborhood in which we met. For 8 years, I faithfully traveled an hour and a half west from my home in the Columbia River Gorge to seek feedback on whichever novel I was working on at the time. At each meeting, I nervously handed out my stapled pages. Back in the day, everything was hard copy. I never showed up empty-handed like the others did sometimes. I always brought the maximum text length of 2 pages, which allowed everyone enough time to share. When my turn came, per our usual format, I read my pages out loud. As I read, my ears caught every minuscule mistake that my eyes had failed to see during the plethora of revisions that had led up to that most vulnerable of moments. At the conclusion of my reading, I sat outwardly still, inwardly convulsing as ink members marked up my work. When the waiting was mercifully over, around the table they went, offering verbal feedback, either positive or crushing, but always with the intent of respectful support. This process, though anxiety-riddled and ego-deflating, proved tremendously helpful. During my time in Hollywood, Inc., I made strides in my writing skills that would have been impossible in isolation. While it is true that my writer's journey was expedited by attending conferences and studying how-to books and by cultivating a first-rate peer group, the absolute number one way that I became a better writer was through writing, aka my butt in the chair. For 15 years, I chose to write for a minimum of 1 hour per day. I set my alarm, I arose before the sun, and I wrote every day. Some mornings I wrote for 2 or 3 hours. Once in a great while, I wrote for 4, which made me feel like a champion, but inevitably backfired. For 2 days afterward, my brain was mush, which knocked me out of my writing groove. Though I often fantasized about a future that offered solid blocks of writing time in which my muse could fully unfurl, the mainstay of my dedication to becoming a world-class novelist manifested in the humble investment of a single hour per day. 60 measly minutes, most of which were unfulfilling and plagued with doubt. Most mornings, I spent 45 minutes clawing my way out of swamp brain, where I was mired in the mud of self-recrimination. Then, in a brief and precious reprieve, I stepped onto the smooth, sandy shore of heaven, where words flowed joyfully onto the page like water. Floating in a current of goodness and light, the heavy bricks that I'd been struggling to wedge into a wall magically clicked into place. But just as the story structure began to take shape, time's up, the clock would announce, and reality would bash down the door, causing my ephemeral house to collapse around me. As my day job and other concrete obligations unapologetically barked for my attention, I deserted my craft until the following morning when, with a heavy yet hopeful heart, I began once again from ground zero, trudging through 45 muddy minutes to reach the golden 15. Crashing in defeat. After many years of die-hard dedication, my writing aspirations burned to the ground with a disheartening flash of understanding. In one of the lowest lows of my life, I came to the realization that I was not a novelist. A mediocre novelist, yes, but a great novelist, not even close. Despite my very best efforts, I had failed to produce a novel that I was proud of. My literary shortcoming wasn't a result of life circumstances or moral failings. I had created a supportive enough environment, and Lord knows I had invested the effort. My fiction writing ambitions halted when I realized that I was simply incapable. My novels, I concluded with heartbreaking clarity, were boring because I could not kill my darlings. Nowhere in the hundreds of pages of my tomes would a reader find the unbearable or the egregious. I was simply incapable of hurting anyone, even my fictional characters. My stories fell flat and I fell apart. I did not write for 3 years. After I abandoned my writing, I wandered lost. Preparing meals, caring for my home, exploring the underwater world of the Pacific through my snorkel mask, daily miracles, which I had previously met with enthusiasm, became mere reflections of the vacancy within. sharp colors that had for so long crowded the space beneath my skin, elbowing for my attention, were drowned in a wash of gray. The instant I quit writing, my heart stopped beating. In the decades leading up to my defeat, anxiety had fueled my fervent overachievement, my waking hours a crazed sprint toward change. Day after day, I had rushed to transform myself into someone who was good enough, fearful that I would miss my chance at happiness like a bus that I had failed to catch. When I abandoned my identity as an author, when I stopped scrimping for bus fare, when I stopped scrambling to figure out which bus would deliver me to my imagined destination, when I stopped imagining a destination, my hope and fear both escaped through a tailpipe of exhaust, leaving me sick and empty. At the time, I perceived my loss as a merciless machete, destroying the diseased towering oaks that I had nurtured from acorns. While my higher power showered me with compassion, she did not restore my old way of life. From her omnipresent perch, she saw that I was finally allowing life to clear away the blackberry brambles that had ensnared me for decades. Pleased that I was surrendering my set-in-stone expectations for how my life should be, she guided me step by baby step toward more fun and fulfillment than I had ever conceived. Back then, I was worlds away from stepping into the flip-flops of a life coach. Still healing from childhood wounds, I was just beginning to gather my wellness tools, not to mention my wavering self-worth. It takes confidence to write the messages of one's heart and then post them for all the world to see. Such a demanding level of vulnerability required more inner strength than I possessed at the time. Though relinquishing my identity as a fiction writer was devastating, I can now see that my higher power was preparing me for my current role as a nonfiction author of nurturing works, a purpose much better suited to me than the plan I had created for myself. Through my podcasts, my books, my coaching, and my speaking, I am privileged to share with my readers and listeners easy-to-follow practices that offer powerful healing. In gratitude, I extend to you the warmest welcome from my oceanfront lanai, where in the next three episodes, I will share how to move through life's trickiest challenges with divine grace and a sense of humor. All three episodes are live right now, so go and have a listen. In humility and gratitude, I stand before you, a student and teacher dedicated to healing. My greatest hope is that my wellness tools will help you honor yourself and celebrate your victories. If you have a suggestion for a future episode of Quiet Your Mind Chatter, reach out to me at wellnesswithlucky.com or on Instagram at wellnesslucky or Facebook or YouTube at wellnesswithlucky. Until we meet again, aloha. I am putting the finishing touches on my new book, Quiet Your Mind Chatter, which is a follow-up to my first book, Willing Souls, How to Brave Uncertainty and Find Peace. The title, Willing Souls, willing because you are willing to make changes to create an even more awesome life than you already have. How cool is that? Souls is spelled S-O-L-S, like the Spanish word for sun, because as you shed layers of mind chatter's lies, you become a beacon of light to others, shining in the dark, shining the light that you are. Okay, I'm getting a little carried away. Willing Souls is available on my site, Wellness with Lucky, and on Amazon.